You're listening to Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. In this week's episode, five-time world champion Mick Doohan helps us preview this weekend's Tissot Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix. We catch up with Aussie Moto3 rising star Jack Miller, and we chat to American Supercross rider Josh Hill. There's all that and more on Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix.
Welcome to episode 28 of Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian Grand Prix. Matt Clayton with you for our special event preview episode ahead of this weekend's Tissot Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix at Phillip Island. Over the next half hour, we'll chat to Aussie Moto3 rising star Jack Miller and catch up with American Supercross rider Josh Hill ahead of rounds 4 and 5 of the Australian Supercross Championship at the Island this weekend. But before we introduce our first guest, it's a warm welcome to my co-host Mark Vittoria. G'day Mark.
G'day Matt.
It's race week. We've been looking forward to this for quite some time. And what are you looking forward to most seeing down there?
I'll probably have to say Mark Marquez. I think he's had a phenomenal rookie year. And to see him in the flesh on a MotoGP bike, probably the best bike in the paddock at the moment, is going to be spectacular.
Well, look, we're going to preview the race a little bit later on. But our first guest is a man who needs little introduction. He's a five-time 500cc world champion, and he's one of the greats of the sport. Joining us on the line is Mick Doohan. We spoke about a year ago about Mark Marquez and what impact he might have as a rookie on the MotoGP World Championship. It's fair to say that he's exceeded most expectations so far. How impressed have you been by what he's done this year?
You know, I'd say nobody had any idea how strong he was going to be. Everyone knew he'd be quick, for sure, but he's consistently quick in the Moto 2. But the way he's come in and he's maintained the momentum from the start. A lot of the guys come in and they're quick and but they slowly lose it after a few crashes or whatever. And for some reason or another, they lose the confidence. But he maintained his speed. He didn't crash for a while. I think having a few wins under his belt early sort of really threw his confidence to the next level. And even by making a few mistakes, as the season rolled on, his confidence was that high that it hasn't hurt him. So, you know, I don't think anyone would have picked how strong he's been, but it's been fantastic for the sport. And, you know, I don't think anyone's complaining, that's for sure.
Of course, he came through the junior categories. He was referred to by one journalist as Marquez the Merciless. He was pretty brutal with some of the overtakes he put on. And we've seen a couple of incidents this year, most notably Danny Pedrosa at Aragon and the accident that Pedrosa had there. What are your thoughts on his level of aggression? Is it acceptable? I mean, we obviously know he got a penalty point after Aragon, but how do you see his aggression against the main guys in this first year?
Yeah, I don't think it's anything to worry about, really. It's, you know, you need to have a controlled amount of aggression, and I don't see that he's just out of control. So, you know, for me, it's not an issue. What happened in Aragon, you know, he certainly... to be fair, you could hardly, from the television footage, it hardly even look like he touched him. You know, it must have been very light, if anything. And but it was obviously enough to just clip a sensor.
Mick, where do you see Danny Pedrosa at this point? He's been with HRC in MotoGP since 2006. Was this his one and only chance to beat Marc Marquez?
He hasn't had a lucky streak, I guess, over the past few years, but certainly this year he probably thought, as he, you know, I don't think he thought as convincingly when Stoner won that it would be a fairly simple season for him, but he possibly thought that this year was going to be an easier year for him because he's got Marquez coming straight in from Moto2. It'll probably take him a little bit of time to get up to speed, but that hasn't been the case. So, you know, Danny's been a great rider. The only thing I feel for Danny is that now that they have another Spaniard in the team to anchor the Repsol sponsorship to, that may leave him in a situation for beyond next year when contracts are due.
Now, speaking of Spain, Mick, I'm sure you can hum the Spanish national anthem. We get to hear it every second week, as you know. But Jorge Lorenzo said last week that he said he felt quite helpless at times this year to try and combat Marquez and HRC. Do you think that's more a comment about his health and fitness after the injuries that he's had, or just a plea to Yamaha to try and keep up with the pace of the development that Honda's had on that bike?
No, I think he's paying a little respect to Marquez as well. You know, the Yamaha certainly has its strong points. You know, the Honda has its strong points, but certainly this year the combination between the two, Marquez and Honda, have been just too hard to get on top of consistently. You know, last year with Stoner, with the Honda, the Yamaha seemed to have all the boxes ticked. So, you know, pretty much throughout the MotoGP 500 World Championship, you know, one rider, one bike seems to have the edge 1 year, and then the next one seems a little bit better the next. So that's just part of racing, I think. But Denny Pedrosa's no slouch, and Lorenzo's been beating him. So I think it's just a combination of Marquez and the Honda versus the combination of Lorenzo and the Yamaha at the moment. And as you say, he's been, you know, with a little bit more luck, you know, it may have been a different championship. But, you know, that's, again, part of racing. You need to have that luck. You need to stay injury-free, and the most consistent man wins. And, you know, it's getting down to the end of the series. There's not a lot of races left, so there's not a lot of points on the table to try and recover from some of those injury races that he wasn't able to score points.
Mick, we know that Casey Stoner has dominated the island the last 6 years. We know he's doing a parade lap this weekend with yourself and Wayne Gardner, but do you foresee a time when he may come back for a few faster laps, and how long can he wait before that actually may happen?
I'm not sure, but you know, I'm quite confident he'll dominate the parade lap, that's for sure. You know, so there won't be any challenge there. If he wants to come back, he's already doing some riding now, testing for Honda, etc. You know, who knows? There could be a he could be on a bike as early as next year if he wanted to be. But from what he's saying, he wants to have a year doing completely nothing other than spending time with his family and friends. So, you know, 15, I don't think would be too far out of the picture for him. He still knows how to ride. He's still young enough. The only problem is with walking away from a sport, it's always difficult to come back and fully immerse yourself back into something that you were so easy to do when you were doing it day in, day out, week in, week out. And to walk away for a few years and have a very much more flexible itinerary, it's hard to get back into that routine and pushing yourself as much as he once was. But in saying that, he's an immensely talented rider, so anything's possible. But I would have thought that 15 would, if he was going to come back, 15 is going to have to be the year. Beyond that, it's going to get more difficult.
Yeah. So do you sense a touch of regret in his decision to step away?
Oh, look, I'm not sure. You know, I always thought it was a little too early, and I couldn't... you know, not knowing the complete circumstances, I couldn't understand completely what the reasoning was behind it. You know, at the end of the day, it is the pinnacle of motorcycle sport. So, you know, and we being us riders, ex-riders, we're just part of the show. We don't make the rules. So, you know, there still is and remains the best and number one motorcycle racing on the planet. So, if you want to race motorcycles, that's where you want to be. So, you know, although he didn't like some aspects of it, it's still a great championship and a great series on great motorcycles. But so perhaps there could be a little bit of that, or perhaps he's just simply tired and wanted to have a rest.
Of course, with no Casey this year, Mick, we're keeping an eye out for the next generation of Aussies. We're going to speak to Jack Miller a bit later on in this show, but what's your take on how he and Arthur Sissis are faring and their prospects going forward?
Look, I think it's fantastic. I admire their commitment to head over there to be in these junior categories. We haven't had a lot of success in the junior categories over the years. You know, they're certainly making a name for themselves in Moto3, and you know, I'm glad to hear that people are taking notice of them, because that might encourage others and team owners to at least put them onto some of the Moto2 and hopefully MotoGP before too long, and we can be celebrating another Australian in the in MotoGP.
Just Phillip Island in general, it probably hasn't got the best infrastructure. It's probably not the slickest circuit, but there's something really special about that layout, isn't there?
Look, the layout is. I think, you know, it wasn't rocket science when they resurfaced the track many years ago. It was pretty much a track designed many years ago, and I think a lot of the old circuits around the world were the most enjoyable. You know, it does make for great motorcycle racing down there, and as you say, the infrastructure lets it down a little, but to be fair, it is a flyaway event for MotoGP, so they can't bring along a lot of their motor infrastructure. So I think it suits everyone okay. It's a bit of a shame that our general public don't get to experience the atmosphere that are at the European events, and the size and the glamour of it all, which that's about the only thing that's let down by Phillip Island. But certainly as a pure racing circuit, it's right up there in and amongst the best that the circuit has on offer at the moment.
Mick, before we let you go, look into your crystal ball for us. What happens this weekend at the Island, and are we going to see the second Premier Class World Champion as a rookie in the sport's history? What do you think?
Well, I think if it doesn't happen here, it'll happen the following week. You know, with I think there's only 7 points left. You know, it's that sort of gap. It'd only be a miracle for Lorenzo to be able to recapture the title. So there's a possibility. It'd be great if that happens. It'd be great for the Australian Grand Prix, at least. Although we don't have an Australian to celebrate, we'd have at least be able to celebrate the World Championship with Marquez. And what's going to happen? It's a really tough one to say. What I do know is that three Spaniards and an Italian are probably going to be there. And you know, what would be great is to see somebody like a Carl Crutchlow get up and actually get on top of that podium. So he's about to go to Ducati. It'd be great for him to have a good race on the Yamaha. The Honda's good around there. But pretty much everything is good around there, really. It's just the nature of the track. But beyond that, until we see what's happening in day one, and especially day two down there, it's a bit hard to just say that it's going to be a runaway success by any one of them.
Well, there's so much to look forward to, Mick, as always. Thanks very much for joining us on the podcast, and we look forward to seeing you at the Island over the rest of the week.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
With just days remaining until the Tissot Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix, the World Championship is well and truly alive. Now is your chance to secure your seat at Victoria's largest regional events. Grandstand seats are still available from just $290 for 3 days. Visit MotoGP.com.au to book now. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at OzMotoGP. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
. 2013 has been a great year for Australia's Jack Miller. He's run towards the front consistently in Moto3 for the Coretta Technology team, and he's signed a deal to move to the Red Bull KTM IO outfit for next season. Mark Vettore tracked him down at Sepang last weekend.
Your new deal with KTM in 2014, how long did it take to come about, and how did the process work?
Well, it was a difficult thing, you know. I mean, it's a big choice in the career and everything like that, and it's sort of just all fell into place, and to go with Aki, you know, and the Red Bull KTM guys is a great opportunity. I mean, they're leading the title this year, and they won the title last year, and they won previous 1-5 titles, so it's sort of, and the offer was a really good one, so yeah, you know, it's sort of get on the best machine with the best team and can't turn it down, you know.
Obviously, it's a very, very strong team. Your own season this year on the Honda, 7th place at the moment. How do you rate your season so far?
Yeah, season's been pretty good. I mean, we've had a couple of down moments, but mostly ups. And Yeah, we've been consistent and been doing a good job. So it seems to be working out pretty good. And I mean, the team's done a great job this year with the material that we've had.
How have you changed as a rider in the last 12 months? Do you feel you've matured, become more experienced, better racecraft? And do you actually have a mentor in the paddock that you work with to help you achieve your goals?
No, not really. I mean, Damo's coming along now because he's doing his wild cards and that sort of thing. But, I mean, mentor and stuff like that, I've sort of been flying pretty solo as of this year, you know. And, the biggest thing is I've just got the team around me now that can facilitate what I needed to do, you know. To work with these guys has been a lot better than it has been in the past with other people.
Recently, you've been hanging out with the likes of Rossi and Hayden on some dirt bikes at Mr. Rossi's place in Italy. How did that come about, and how was the experience?
Yeah, you know, it was a really good, fun afternoon, and it just sort of came about. You know, I think it was at one of the parties. We said g'day to him, and you know, we said when you're going to invite us to the ranch, he said you can come whenever you want. It sort of came about, and yeah, kept in contact with him and sort of organised it all for us to Misano, and it was a really great day, and it was a really, really cool day. And the guy, he's just a true legend, you know. I mean, he invites us to come back again the next whenever we want and stuff like that. So just really good guy.
Were you faster than him?
In the end, actually, I wasn't. Like, I was quite disappointed, you know. We was close at the end, but it was difficult, you know. We didn't have the bike set up or anything like that. Me and Apple was just riding some of his bikes. So. It was really good, though. I mean, it was difficult. It was like nothing I've ever ridden before. You know, I've ridden dirt track and everything like that, but nothing that I've really ever ridden before.
Sounds like one of those experiences you remember for the rest of your days. Phillip Island last year in the Moto3 race, probably one to forget for you. Got a ride-through penalty, finished 21st, and you probably kicked yourself afterwards after what happened. Mate, you're looking forward for the chance to really atone for that disappointing effort last year.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I'm looking forward to getting back there and getting on the track. You know, I really do like it, and I think it will be a lot better this year than it was last year. We're definitely in a better situation and better people around us to do a better job than what we did with the past years.
For the rest of the season, what are your goals? Obviously, you've nibbled at a couple of top fives and potentially got there, but is that really what you're looking at for the rest of this year, just try and get into the top five and really consolidate?
Yeah, you know, I think the goals for the weekend, it will be to, you know, I'd like to be on the hot end once this year, and it being a Phillip Island, I'll take it wherever, you know, but Phillip Island be a real special one, but, you know, I can't predict anything, and it'll be another difficult track for the Honda, but we'll see how we go.
We've talked about 2014. Do you have any plans beyond that, 2015 beyond, for your racing career? Maybe move into Moto2? At that stage?
Yeah, definitely we'll be making a move to 2015 and Moto2. You know, I'm getting too big and everything like that, and who it will be with and everything like that, I can't really cry for now, but it will be happening.
This Sunday, yourself and Arthur Sisters will be big Aussie hopes in the Moto3 race. We look forward to seeing you racing around at the front of the pack, and all the best for Sunday.
Thank you very much, mate, and we look forward to being there and getting on track and telling the Aussie fans it was good.
Whether you're working on a shoestring budget or have cash to burn, there's a ticket and transport option available for you at this weekend's Tissot Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix. General admission starts at just $45 on Friday through to $160 for all 3 days. Make sure you're there to witness history as Spanish young gun Marc Marquez aims to seal the 2013 World Championship in his rookie season. Visit MotoGP.com.au to book now. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
American Josh Hill has been banging bars with the likes of Aussie superstar Chad Reed since 2006, and he's now in Australia competing in the 2013 National Supercross title, which will take him to Phillip Island this weekend. Josh is now on the line. G'day, Josh.
Hey, how's it going?
Well, thanks, mate. Is this your first visit to Australia, and what have been your impressions so far?
Oh yeah, it's my first time over here. I've had, you know, raced with a lot of good guys over here from Australia, and just always wanted to come check it out. And the opportunity arose where I could come do the full Supercross series, so I jumped on.
Mate, one of your sponsors is Kerry Hart, the legendary freestyle motocross rider, probably more well-known in Australia as a better half of Pink. Did he give you some tips on living the Aussie life?
You know, we didn't talk too much about it. It was actually just the Hart & Huntington distributor over here, Airstyle Imports, Kale Wallace, was the one that got me over here and kind of made the push to get me. And I ride for Kerry back in the States, so it was just a good fit.
The first two rounds of the Australian Supercross Championship were held in Darwin in mid-September. I think you finished fourth and eighth in the two finals. How did you see that first outing on Aussie soil?
We were a bit unprepared for the first round. It didn't go really at all how I wanted it to go. We had some bike problems, and I just really wasn't ready for the style of track that they brought out, my suspension setup and things like that. So we struggled a bit, but you know, over the last month, I've stayed out at Cade Mosick's house, and he's been just letting me ride with him and ride on his track, and I feel a lot more prepared coming into this next weekend.
How did the humidity in Darwin treat you?
You know, it wasn't too much bad. It wasn't the, you know, physical side of it. I'd just come off a summer in California, and it was real warm out there, so I was kind of used to the heat, but just really wasn't used to the track, and I was on a completely different motorcycle than I'm used to racing.
Looking ahead to Phillip Island for round 4 and 5, is it going to be exciting racing in front of such a big crowd? I know you race in front of big crowds in America, but this is kind of a unique situation, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I heard the crowd was really big last year for it. I heard it was almost tough to see. There were so many people. So that'll be great. You know, there wasn't the biggest crowd up in Darwin, and I'm really excited to get a real taste what the Australian Supercross is all about.
The circuit at Phillip Island is fairly tight and technical. Is that going to suit you, or do you prefer the more larger, expansive tracks?
No, I really like the tight and technical setup. I think the only thing that I have really brought over from the States is my suspension, and I have my suspension set up kind of similar to something that we'd race over back home, and it didn't really work on the open Darwin circuit, so the more tight, the more technical, the bigger the jumps, the better my setup should work.
So after this recent training and obviously a better bike, do you reckon you can get over top of the Aussies at Phillip Island?
Well, I mean, that's the goal. I mean, that's why I'm out here to you know, I just want to race, I want to try to win, and I want to, you know, best prepare myself for the 2014 AMA Supercross Series coming up in January.
And what about MotoGP racing? Are you going to be glued to the fence when you're not applying your trade at Phillip Island? And are you a big fan of MotoGP racing?
Yeah, no, I've grown up watching it on TV. It's obviously the pinnacle of motorcycle racing, pretty much, MotoGP. So I've never been able to attend one, so I'm really excited to be actually competing at one. And hopefully, if I get a chance, I'll get over and talk to some of the guys and just kind of check out how the teams work.
So I thought you may have been to Laguna Seca at least, but not at all.
No, never been. Just watched a lot of them on TV.
Josh, we look forward to seeing you at the island this weekend. Of course, it's rounds 4 and 5 of the Australian Supercross Championship, and you can head across to Lukey Heights to catch all the action, with qualifying kicking things off on Friday. Josh, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you. I'm excited.
Thinking about camping at this year's Australian Motorcycle Grand Prix? The two well-equipped campgrounds at the Phillip Island Grand Prix circuit are able to accommodate everything from simple two-person tents to deluxe motorhomes and feature easy access to the track, a general store and bottle shop, live entertainment on Friday, Saturday and Sunday nights, and the all-important hot showers. It's the full MotoGP experience. Visit MotoGP.com.au to book now. This is Keeping Track, the official podcast of the Australian GP.
Before we sign off on this episode of Keeping Track, a quick look at the state of play in all three World Championship classes ahead of this weekend after the Malaysian Grand Prix at Sepang last Sunday. And of course, at Malaysia, Danny Pedrosa, his third win of the season, his first since round 4 at Le Mans in May, really was a man on the mission the entire weekend, led all three practice sessions. Marc Marquez, second place behind his teammate, 2.7 seconds in arrears. Jorge Lorenzo, 6 seconds further back. And Mark, the story of the race really was a ferocious battle between Jorge Lorenzo and Marc Marquez after Pedrosa had cleared off. It was right on the boundaries of aggressiveness, wasn't it?
It was. It was only two or three laps, but it was pretty ferocious. I don't often see Lorenzo like that. He was really, really in that aggressive mindset last weekend. He wasn't going to let Marquez pass, and a bit of argy-bargy between the two before Marquez obviously pulled away. But no, that was probably the most exciting part of the race because Pedrosa was in the zone last weekend. I don't think anyone was going to beat Pedrosa, so he was doing the job out front. So it was left to the other two Spaniards to engage in a bit of an arm wrestle there for a while.
I was watching that on a train from Suzuka back to Nagoya on Sunday night, and I must say I was attracting a bit of an audience because I was getting pretty excited with what was going on. But mentioned Danny Pedrosa before. He really came to Sepang with a pretty determined mindset. Obviously, the disappointment of Aragon the race before, knows his world championship's probably over. Qualified fifth, but did get caught out a little bit with the wet-dry qualifying there at Sepang, but really the class of the field, wasn't he?
He was. We saw it probably last year with Danny in the last 6 to 7 races last year. He was really in that zone too, where he's qualifying well fast from the get-go, really, at the start of a weekend. And then last weekend, that was the case too. He just got in front. And when he's like that, he rarely makes mistakes. He just pulls away and seemingly does it really easily. You just wonder why he can't seemingly produce that on a consistent basis all year round. But certainly in Malaysia, he was the man.
Yeah, we haven't seen it as much this year, as you said. Mark Marquez second, by the way. His 14th podium in 15 starts in the Premier class. The only time he hasn't finished on the podium is when he crashed out at Mugello. And I thought what was interesting there was that perhaps earlier in the season, he might have charged up right behind Pedrosa and tried to scrap it out for the win. But he knows as long as he finishes ahead of Jorge Lorenzo, no matter where that is, then it's job done, isn't it?
Exactly. Pedrosa really didn't mean much to him last weekend. Long as Lorenzo was behind him, that was job done. He got that sort of over and done with about halfway through the race. Lorenzo behind, cruised till the end, and a 40-odd point leader, or nearly a 50-point leader with three rounds to go. So it's Marquez probably all the way.
Now, looking further back through the field, Valentino Rossi fourth for the 7th time this season and the 5th time in the last 6 races. I feel like a broken record saying this. Good battle between Alvaro Bautista and Cal Crutchlow for 5th. Of course, Crutchlow making another poor start and having to recover through there. So Bautista eventually winning that little battle. Nicky Hayden's season at Ducati, we know his time there is winding down. Another disaster with the engine letting go. The one guy who wasn't there who could have been fighting up the front, Stefan Bradl, broke his right ankle in practice. A pretty strange accident. Slid off at turn one and actually broke his ankle when it caught in the AstroTurf. So latest we've heard is that he's had an operation in Kuala Lumpur and he'll try and be ready for the island this weekend. And what was interesting in light of that was talk of a possible replacement rider on the Honda. Who's the test rider for HRC, Mark?
One Casey Stoner, I think.
So yeah, some bloke is quite good around Phillip Island.
Indeed.
I think there's absolutely no chance. I think Bradl will be there. In what sort of shape Bradl's in, I guess, that's the question.
Well, that's the thing. It's meant Phillip Island's a fairly aggressive circuit, so to have any sort of injury really does hamper you, and especially to 24-odd laps around the circuit, it's pretty difficult.
So let's have a look at those championship standings. Mark Marquez, 298 points. He has a 43-point lead over Jorge Lorenzo, a 54-point lead over Danny Pedrosa. So the equation for Marquez, he needs to outscore Lorenzo by 7 points this weekend to leave Phillip Island as a world champion. He can win the race. If Lorenzo's third, that's not good enough. So what do you think? Do you think Marquez leaves Australia with a world championship in his pocket?
Well, I think we'll be seeing a rookie world champion crowned on Sunday afternoon for sure. He'll fit, as it's a bad race for Marquez, he might finish third, but that will certainly be enough to get the job done. And knowing his aggressive race instincts, he'll be pushing for the victory as well, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him on top of the podium and taking the world championship, so it could be a dream day for the young Spaniard.
I'm going to go slightly counter to you there. Now, I was going to say if I'm a betting man, but I'm not. But I reckon Danny Pedrosa wins the race. I think he's now just going to be riding for himself. He knows that something extraordinary has to happen for him to be in the championship race. I can see Pedrosa winning, a little bit like Sepang, perhaps clearing off. What Marquez does behind is going to be what everyone has their eyes on.
Oh, for sure. Past years, Casey Stoner's managed to pull away and really gap the field. But this year, I think it'll be tighter. But I think, Pedrosa is definitely in the zone now. He could be the man. But Marquez and Lorenzo, if they do some argy-bargy like last weekend in Malaysia, that would be that'd certainly be a highlight for the spectators down there at the island. But yeah, it's interesting to see how it's going to pan out. But I don't think it's going to be a huge gap between all the riders like has in past years. I don't think anyone's got the sheer pace of a Stoner around the island to do that, so that's going to keep them bunched together.
Of course, but it's been so long, of course, since we've seen anyone other than Casey Stoner win a MotoGP race down there. Marco Melandri, for anyone who's struggling to remember the last time a non-Casey Stoner Australian Grand Prix win in 2006. We remember the last corner of that year. That was good fun, wasn't it?
was indeed. And at the island, I don't think any bike is better than the other. I think Mick may have mentioned that. I think Stoner's been that good, and he could have won at anything around there, Stoner. So I think, don't think any bike has a particular advantage over the other. I think the Pond is probably marginally better, but certainly going to be close and fiercely contested racing, that's for sure.
Let's just run through the Moto2 and Moto3 categories as well. Scott Redding leads the Moto2 championship, but by just 9 points now. He's got the staggers a little bit late in the season. He's been off the podium for three races in a row now. Tito Rabat was the story in Malaysia. All three practice sessions, pole position, won the race, absolutely dominant. He's just 28 points behind, so he's a show for the championship as well. Be interesting to see how it goes in that team, given that he and Espargaro are teammates. That race, of course, shortened in Sepang to 12 laps after a pretty horrendous accident on the first lap.
Yeah, it was indeed. It was a massive crash here at the back of the pack. Espargaro actually won here last year, so he's certainly got the runs on the board at Phillip Island. I think Scott Redding, he's got actually qualify a bit better. He's been struggling qualifying. It's really hard. Moto 2 bikes are so evenly contested motorcycles. It's really hard to push through the field, so he's got to certainly get himself onto the front row or early on the second row to really push for that championship. Oh, I mean, he's still the leader, he's still in the box seat, but he's got to get that momentum back he had at the start of the year.
Well, of course, Espargaro here last year in Moto2 was absolutely fantastic. Won that race by 17 seconds, which in a category where everyone's basically running the same setup, it's a pretty impressive effort. Looking ahead to Moto3, Louis Salom, his seventh win of the year at Sepang last weekend. Superbly judged final corner with Alex Rins there. So he extends his championship lead to 14 points with three races to go. The top six in that race separated by just 1.1 seconds. And the man who finished sixth, Jack Miller, arguably his best weekend of the year, I think.
Well, I think so. Jack was really, really good in that race. And to finish less than a second off the winner is superb. Phillip Island didn't have such good luck last year. He had to ride stop-go-through penalty after breaking the start. But I think this year he's got the package, he's got the pace, he's got the confidence. The only thing really, the X factor is, can he stay in the draft of the quicker bikes on his Honda? If he can manage to and stay in the back of those guys, we could see some really, really daring braking manoeuvres at turn 11, turn 10, turn 11 on the last lap.
I'll certainly be watching him off the start. He was gutted with that last year. Just a note on Moto3 too. Maverick Viñales finished fifth in Sepang. He's now 26 points off the championship lead, so you suspect he may be out of it with just three races to go.
I think so. I think he's out. I think it's Salom or Rins for that for the Moto3 title. And a lot will depend, obviously, what happens at Phillip Island on Sunday.
And, of course, our other Aussie in Moto3, and he was on the podium here last year, Arthur Sissis. He's 12th overall in the championship, started and finished 19th at Sepang, had to avoid another rider who'd fallen in front of him. So disappointing for Arthur there, but he'll certainly be looking for another podium at Phillip Island coming up in a few days' time.
Upgrade your MotoGP weekend to The Garage. New for 2013 and modelled on the successful Doohan Pavilion, The Garage is an undercover hub to refuel, rest and catch up with mates while enjoying excellent views of the Turn 1 action. Featuring a cash bar and giant screen, The Garage is an affordable way for you to upgrade your MotoGP weekend. Book now at MotoGP.com.au. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at AusMotoGP.
That's all we have time for on this episode of Keeping Track. Don't forget to like AusMotoGP on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at AusMotoGP, and go to MotoGP.com.au, where you'll find a link to a complete archive of all our shows. It's our final episode for 2013, so a big thanks to the departing Laura McLaughlin for all of her support over the last 3 years. For co-host Mark Vittore and producer Peter Mercato, I'm Matt Clayton. Thanks for listening, enjoy the island, and we'll be back on Keeping Track soon.